The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. Live, stuck in a space freighter cargo hold en route to Icon 29, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it
now.
Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you? Who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy, celebrating its 25th year, presents Doctor Who Podshock. This is Louis Trapani, and you'll be hearing from Ken Deep and James Norton a little later. Also, a word of note that we have extra episodes coming up soon. These are extra content episodes for Podshock supporting subscribers. They're coming very soon. We had one in the works right now, but we had to preempt it a bit just to get this episode out because there's some time-sensitive information in this episode that we wanted to get out. And we're on the heels actually tonight. Actually, Icon has already started, Icon 29, and I'm actually recording this as the convention is undergoing right now, but it was important that we get this podcast out, so I'm going to be a little late. Now, speaking of Icon, Icon 29 is this weekend. That's March 26th, 27th, and 28th in Stony Brook, New York at SUNY University. And Doctor Who Podshock is there once again with a live show that's on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's in the Harriman Room. That's room 112. And if you go into Icon, be sure to catch us there. Both Ken Deep and myself will be there live in person, with James Norton coming in via the net in the UK. Also joining us from the UK via the net is Tony Lee, IDW Publishing's writer for Doctor Who, the comic book series, Tony Lee. We may have a special in-person guest as well, so stay tuned for that. Once again, that's 2 p.m. on Sunday, March 28th. Also, on Saturday morning at 11 a.m., both myself and Ken are doing a panel on Doctor Who. Once again, that's in the same room, Harriman 112 at Icon 29. That's in SUNY Stony Brook. If you're attending Icon 29, be sure to catch both. That's at 11 a.m. on Saturday and at 2 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, go to our website, GallifreyanEmbassy.org or Podshock.net. We have details there. Also, for more information about Icon 29, go to IconSF.org. I'm sure to be tweeting about the event during the weekend, so if you want to stay posted, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/LouisTrapani. This podcast is probably going to be a little shorter than normal for Doctor Who Podshock, but it's no less special. We have some great stuff lined up for you in this episode. So, and speaking of great content, as I said, we do have extra episodes lined up for you for Podshock supporting subscribers, and we have regular episodes coming soon as well, and they include various interviews, some from Gallifrey 21, some from other places too. So it's not all just Gallifrey 21. I know you've been hearing a lot from the convention, but we did record a lot there, so there's going to be a little bit more in this podcast as well. We have a segment from Gallifrey 21 here as well, from an interview with the Chicks That Dig Time Lords, the writers of the book, that is. So let's not waste any more time, and let's get rolling, because time's a-wasting. Speaking of Gallifrey 21, a person that was there that was of an enormous help was Eric Escamalia, and he is with us once again with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse. You may know him on Twitter as Bullet33, and this is the latest edition of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse, and it ties right into Gallifrey as well. Gallifrey 1, that is, the convention. Perhaps the planet as well.
Hello, I'm Paul Cornell, and you're listening to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse, written and produced by Bullet33 on Twitter and in the Podshock forums,
entry number 100310.07. Subject, Gallifrey 1. Gallifrey is the well-known home to the Time Lords. Gallifrey 1 is the lesser known but no less renowned home to the cult of Terrans who seek to be immersed in and celebrate your favorite Whoverse. Gallifrey 1 is a wholly remarkable convention. It has already supplanted the Scarrow Degradations as the one-stop all things Who place to be. It is only but a curious coincidence that it is held annually in the city that now stands in the same valley that the stone angels from the beginning of time were once cast out and lost. Hence the host city's more than appropriate name. Almost akin to some sort of anniversary special, many of the Doctor's companions from different eras may be found frequenting this event. Not only former companions, but also many of the historians, scribes, and documenters of the Doctor's vast adventures. One might also equate Gallifrey 1 to a macroscope of sorts, if you will, as one may find life-size representations of a cavalcade of characters and beasties straight out of the annals of the Doctor's travels within the Whoverse. Your favorite blue guy here had the noted pleasure of attending Galley 21, as it's referred to by locals, in Earth year 2010 AD. Your favorite narrator might have more to say on this matter had the indigenous Terrans not forced yours truly to imbibe such large quantities of a mind-inhibiting elixir known as beer. At this point, all we have left to say about Galley 21 is, so long and thanks for all the memories. This has been The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse. Please direct all your rants, raves, and comments to at HHGNumeral2W on Twitter or send them to us at guidetothewhoverse@gmail.com. And until next time, don't panic. The opinions and references found here in this commentary in no way adhere to the laws and physics of the real universe, nor do they reflect the opinions and views of the proprietors of this podcast. But please, thank them anyway.
No, and thank you, Eric. That's incredible. It's that's Eric Escamalia, once again, also known as Bullet33 on Twitter and elsewhere on Gallifrey, on the Gallifrey Embassy website, as well as Podshock.net, one and the same. You can check him out there. He also, if you haven't caught his earlier episodes of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse, they're available. It has its own feed now, so check it out. I believe it's available on iTunes, so do a search there and you should find it there. Once again, thank you, Eric. Excellent job. And also, thank you so much for the excellent work you did at Gallifrey 21. It wasn't just the beer that kept him preoccupied. We were putting him to work as well. He did an excellent job behind the camera, and both mostly still photography, but some video work as well. And we owe a gratitude and thanks to Eric for his kindness and taking some time out when he could be actually enjoying the convention, but he was actually photographing us, doing interviews and whatnot. So, again, thank you so much. Also, our live show as well. He did a great job photographing there. Also, Rachel McCauley as well. So, cheers to you both. And so stay tuned for the next episode of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse. Who knows where he'll bring us next time. So now, speaking of Gallifrey 21, we had the pleasure of interviewing several of the people behind the book that was just released, that just came out just recently, Chicks Dig Time Lords. And we're going to go to Gallifrey 21 for our interview there. And joining me is Ken Deep and James Norton. And I'll let the ladies introduce themselves in the interview.
Ken Deep, Louis Trapani, James Norton back on Doctor Who Podchuck. This is something we've been looking forward to for a little bit of time since we've been working this out for like 4 months now. And finally to get you guys all in one, get you ladies all together in one place, it is none other than the Chicks Dig Time Lords. It was actually the name of a book that had been put together all about women and their love for Time Lords. So let's go around the table, because we have a number of people who are involved in this book, in the Chick-Stink Time Lords. So let's go.
Hi, I'm Tara O'Shea. I'm the co-editor and also a contributor to Chick-Stink Time Lords.
Hi, I'm Liz Miles, and I wrote an essay about how awesome Classic Who fandom became after all the bad girls joined in. And I wrote a Doctor Who short trips a couple of years ago.
Hi, I'm Lynn Thomas. I'm the other co-editor of Chick-Stink Time Lords, and I also wrote an essay about marrying into Doctor Who fandom. I didn't start off life as a fan. My husband introduced me to fandom, so I have a slightly skewed perspective, I think.
Hi, I'm Katie Shuttleworth. I draw the webcomic Torchwood Babies, and I designed the cover and drew the comic inside the book about Torchwood Babies.
I'm Tammy Garrison. I am the writer of Torchwood Babies, and I wrote the essay in the middle of the book about Torchwood Babies. It's a little meta, but we like it that way.
All right, let's start with what's the inspiration, what's the impetus for writing a book called Chick-Stink Time Lords?
Well, my first Gallifrey one in 2006, after the first series had aired, I wanted to have different t-shirt to wear every day, a different geeky t-shirt, and I had done a shirt called, that said across it on the front, Chick-Stink Time Lords. And I got it in the back of my head where I thought, you know, I'd love to do the Geek Girl's Guide to Doctor Who fandom. And I had the publishers, at Mount Norwegian Press captive in my home. They were staying with me for a weekend, and in 2007, it was summer of 2007, and I pitched the book to them. And we sort of brought it around to anecdotal essays from women in fandom, from women connected with the series. And the idea was sharing their anecdotal experiences, both in fandom or just their love of the series and their connection to the characters. And then many, many other things happened in 2007, and it became apparent that I could not possibly do this job on my own. And I had known Lynn and Michael Thomas for years, and Lynn had edited a book previously and was also a Doctor Who fan and a good friend. And so she was brought onto the project and quite literally did all the heavy lifting. We each brought in contributors. She brought in many very big name contributors. I did some interviews. And 3.5 years later, it's a real thing I can touch now. I don't actually believe it. It's really amazing.
A little bit surreal, perhaps.
It is deeply surreal, because the first time someone, 10 minutes after getting my contributors' copies, someone turned to me and said, would you autograph my book? And I suddenly thought, oh my god, I have to think of a pithy thing to write on the inside front cover. And then I have to think of a library of different, I have to think of several different pithy things that I can write depending on whose book I'm signing. I've always been on the other side of the table for that. I've always been the person getting a book signed. This is my first professional publishing credit under my name, and it was amazing. But deeply, deeply surreal.
Is it a collection? Because I haven't read the book yet. It just came out, right? It literally just came out.
Yes.
This is the big debut weekend here at Gallifrey, and you had a huge panel where everybody got together and talked about it. Is it a collection of essays from different females?
Yes, it's a collection. It's a collection of 28 of essays and interviews from, I think, 28 total contributors. Some of whom are professional award-winning writers, like Elizabeth Baer, who's won 2 Hugo Awards, and Catherine Valenti, who has won the Mythopoeic Award for her writing. We've got Campbell Award winners in there. I work as a science fiction archivist in my day job, and so I have connections to some of these folks because I'm their archivist, and so it turns out they were Doctor Who fans as well, and so when we started looking for additional essayists, I contacted them and said, would you be willing to write something? And they said, absolutely. Carol Barrowman, John's sister, wrote an essay for us talking about what it's like to grow up with her baby brother. He's still afraid of autons, it seems, which is always a good thing to know about John, because if you want to scare him, all you have to do is be a shop window dummy. And we had interviews with Sophie Aldred and India Fisher, who did Big Finish, as well as Laura Doddington. And then we had other contributors who were just fans, who were people that we knew through conventions and through online. And
had something to say.
Had interesting perspectives. One of the things that we found was that with essay books, it's very easy to have all of the essays sound sort of more or less the same, particularly in American fandom, because so many of us came to Doctor Who through Tom Baker on PBS in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So we tried to get folks who had very specific stories that we have representative Tom Baker fans from the 1980s, but we also have people like me. I came into fandom during the Wilderness years when there was no show, and I was introduced to it because of my husband, who was a fan. And there are other folks who are diehard Peter Davison fans. We have people who are all about Patrick Troughton. Every Doctor is covered, both classic and new series. Lots of companions are covered, and it's really just a celebration. And there's everything from memoir and talking about, you know, the first time I saw the Doctor kind of thing, through to academic essays about Doctor Who and feminism, and critique of the series itself from just a fan perspective. But it's all very celebratory. One of the things we really aimed for, as well as sort of elucidating the fandom experience as experienced by lots of different women, is that we wanted it to be positive. This is a celebratory volume.
For those who are Podshock listeners, we stress all the time about positivity,
yeah,
and in particular with fandom, because there's a tendency, because people feel so passionate,
yes,
to be negative,
yes,
that the minute there's one little thing that they don't like, they dig right in. And Tara's looking at me funny because because of our discussion about Star Trek. So I think what a hypocrite he is, because he's so negative about that.
When we were on the panel earlier today, we actually were talking about the fact that a lot of people only speak up when there's something they disagree with. There's not a lot of voices
who say something is great.
And when the new series premiered and there were a lot of women watching it for the first time, where this was their introduction to Doctor Who, at first there was a little bit of a ghettoization of especially young female fans, and they were called derisively the Squee Girls. And oh no, the Squee Girls are coming in and ruining our complex time travel series with deep, meaningful stuff. They're going, oh my god!
How rude!
And I was very, very nervous the first time I did a panel at a Doctor Who convention, because it was in fact called the Squee Girls, and I just decided we're going to own it. You know what? We're going to own the fact that when something makes us happy, we make a high-pitched sound of glee.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
And there is nothing wrong with that. And it was very important when I pitched the book to stress that I did not want to foster an us versus them. It was very important that we get that across to all the contributors that we solicited, that this was not a here is why the male fans in fandom were mean to me, or here is how we are unique snowflakes. It was more discussing how we female fans love the series for many of the same reasons the male fans do. They just express that love sometimes in ways that are more predominantly found in female-dominated fandoms, but also in a lot of the same ways, like making the costumes and making the models and being in fan films and working on convention staff. And my essay actually was about running the green room in Chicago TARDIS. And having been a fan very briefly in my teens, I hadn't seen the entire series because it had aired and then stopped airing, and this was before the age of DVD. So I was meeting people and feeding people who I hadn't actually seen their episodes often. When I interviewed Sophie, I actually sat down and watched Dragonfire because I just knew that I absolutely loved her as a person and thought she was marvelous and a really wonderful person. I knew how important Ace was to so many people, and that there would be no Rose Tyler or Charlie had they not stood on the shoulders of Ace in a lot of ways for certainly my generation. I'm in my 30s, and Ace is still relevant today, and so it was really cool, actually, to sit down and do that interview with context, because prior to that, I just knew that she was absolutely lovely and beautiful children.
The key thing with Sophie as well is that Sophie, Ace, and the Seventh Doctor are actually, that was, my husband showed me a lot of different episodes, so when he was trying to sort of show me what this thing called Doctor Who was, we saw a smattering of episodes from all of the different eras, but it wasn't until I saw Remembrance of the Daleks with Ace and the Seventh Doctor, and she took on a Dalek with a souped-up baseball bat, mm-hmm, and I said, oh, I get it now. And so when Sophie agreed to be interviewed, I actually had to have Tara do the interview because I couldn't put together coherent sentences, because that's Ace. You know, I'm looking in my email as we're trying to arrange things, and I'm like, there's an email from Ace. It just broke my brain. I couldn't do it. I had to have Tara do it because I could not I couldn't do it. And it's not that Sophie's intimidating. She's a lovely person, and I've met her several times, and she's wonderful. It's just that my glee about Ace as a character is what connects me to the classic series very, very strongly. And I couldn't overcome that in a way of being professional to talk to her specifically about her work. And we really wanted the book to be as professional as possible. I mean, it is a fan production. You know, we are fans, and all of the people who contributed are fans, but we wanted to produce it at as a professional level as possible, because that was important to us. So I made it Tara interview Sophie because I was too nervous.
Let's talk a little, if we could, about Torchwood Babies, mostly because it's a complete phenomenon on the internet. So educate me, not being a huge Torchwood fan, but I am aware, and that should really say volumes about it. How does this come about? What's the thought process on making something like that and drawing and bringing these characters around?
It was actually born at Galley. We were sitting in the lobby, and there are these girls who, to this day, still cosplay Torchwood, and they were dashing through the lobby, and I was like, it's the Torchwood kids! And somebody was like, those two things should never, ever go together. And I was like, do you know what would be even better? Torchwood and babies. Just take it to that extreme. Take it a little bit further, because Torchwood, especially when it first premiered, they kept going on about how grown up it was and your kids can't watch it and blah, blah, blah. But when it came down to it, sometimes they act a little immature and childish, mm-hmm. and they sort of need a teacher to wrangle them or something. And, you know, all of the problems on Torchwood seem to be created by Torchwood themselves. So we thought we'd just take it, you know, a little bit further.
To the extreme.
To the extreme, and, you know, maybe show them for what they really were. I don't want to, you know, be too deep about it or read too much into it. Coming back to LiveJournal, which is a huge fan community and huge female-based fan community.
And getting a round of applause for it, apparently.
Apparently, LiveJournal's that awesome. It's that powerful. I just posted on my live journal that I was looking for an artist, and Katie foolishly responded, God bless her. God bless her little heart.
Well, she had originally pitched it as a flash animated short, and that's what I do for a living. And then, you know, I had my first initial thought of, oh, yay, that'd be fun. And then, you know, reality set over, and it would probably take me probably as long as we have been working on it to actually animate, you know, a couple of minutes of animation. So I had pitched the idea of doing a webcomic instead. And we had originally set the story to be two issues.
Yep.
Two issues.
Two short parts,
and it's turned into five now.
We were two's not going to be enough. Let's make it four. And then we got to, like, the end of four, and it was like, that's five.
So, the opposite of the way comics usually work.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So we are currently, we had just last October posted the fourth part, and now we are currently working on the fifth and final. So that'll be up sometime this year. When that will be, I have no idea.
And we liked Katie's art so much that we asked her to do the cover design. So the character that you see on
fantastic.
The cover of the book, who we have nicknamed Verity for Verity Lambert, the very first producer
cool.
of Doctor Who.
That's so cool.
Verity was designed by Katie. We just said, you know, we want you to do something for the cover because we love your work. And she said, well, what about, you know, a fangirl holding psychic paper with the title on it? We thought, that sounds great. And she did it, and it's just brilliant. And so we're really, really pleased that she was willing to do that for us, because it gives our book a very unique look.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep wandering through the dealer room in, you know, in disbelief because our book is being sold. And we keep overhearing people going, what is that? That cover. I have to have that. And
the cover is phenomenal,
just,
by the way. We're selling just a book on the cover, but when she puts the poster out, yeah. this thing is going to sell like wildfire.
Obviously, we love it to death because it's our book, but we recognize that without Katie's art, it wouldn't be nearly as visually arresting, and we're really grateful for that.
Well, and one of the biggest thrills was when Katie sent us the roughs of the comic, and it's the story of how Torchwood Babies came to be, and Lynn and I are baby-ized.
There are baby versions of us.
In a panel, along with Gary Russell.
And Gary Russell.
And Gary Russell.
There's a baby Gary Russell.
He's been babied. It was...
I'm sure.
I'm trying to hold it back.
I'm
I can't.
Sure he will be thrilled.
We've killed him.
Oh, no.
He knows.
Well, I know he knows, it, but that you said that he's been babying. I know. You've turned that into
he's
a bird.
He's a fragile, fragile artist. He's fragile. That is how fragile. But he is a wonderful man. And
absolutely.
In fact,
we asked him if it was. Yeah. We all asked him. Mm-hmm. We asked him if it was okay. And he thought.
Because if he would have a problem with
it. No, he reads.
The right person to say yes.
Yeah, he's read the comic and the book and he loved it and we're just thrilled.
Well, I met him last September or so, August, September. I live in New York and there's a meetup.
We were there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yay! He was there and I wanted to, thank him for letting us use him in our comic. So I printed out, larger picture of that and he flipped out. In the middle of the poem.
In a good way.
And then Tammy and I went to Hurricane Who last October, and Tony Lee, I had never met him before. He comes up to me, first thing he says, not hi, I'm Tony Lee. He said, can you please draw a baby me?
Aww.
So I did.
Yes, and now reaction not only from fans of Doctor Who, but people who actually work on Doctor Who has been phenomenal. I mean, we found out that John Barrowman has a blown up baby in his trailer. And
baby drawing of him.
Yes.
Another blown up baby.
Wow, that came out.
You wouldn't put it past John Barrowman. Yeah.
And we quite literally flipped out, melted into the floor, heads exploded. I mean, it was epic. And, I keep meeting new people with the production that have read it and enjoyed it. And I kind of flip out a little inside and I try to keep my stuff together because, I'm cool and,
professional.
No. These are people that I fangirl, and then when they say that, they really enjoyed my stuff, I can't keep it together.
Yeah, we're just busy mutually fangirling pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
I do want to point out, just for the record, that the Tortured Babies comic is in no way infringing upon any properties of the BBC. It is all about the production of Tortured Babies itself that is in the printed form that is for sale. All of the Tortured Babies fan art in the webcomic is never sold, and there's no money involved, and
it is non-commercial, completely
done out of love, and we just want to point that out.
Understood.
To avoid getting sued.
That's basically what it's coming down to.
We love you, BBC Worldwide.
Yes, you are wonderful. We are doing this for joy. It is all about the joy. So it's just been a really great experience for all of us. This has been, to put it mildly, slightly surreal, I think.
What have you learned from the experience insofar as chicks digging Time Lords? What is the thing that, after doing this project and bringing all these different parts together, something that just, was there anything that dawned on you that you were like, wow, geez, this isn't even...
I think for me, the biggest thing that I learned is that there really was a need for this. We've had more people walking up to us and just saying, thank you so much for this. We're so glad someone did this because, the critique is nice and we enjoy the series. And we all argue about favorite episodes and least favorite episodes and all of that. And we all have very strong opinions that differ. And even within the book, there are people that violently disagree with one another about portrayals of the Doctor and particular episodes and things like that. But we've all... put together a book that really seems to represent, true positivity about the series and just how much people love it. And people are really strongly responding to that and just saying, thank you. It's just nice to have something that's just really positive and lovely and girls,
The response has been tremendous to the book because we've been doing our live show here for 3 years now, and the thing with Gallifrey is that there's always multiple things going on at once. There's no way to be everywhere at once, and that's my complaint about Gallifrey is that you can only do one thing at a time.
Right.
So, but this year, like no other year, we got so much response from, oh no, Doctor Who Project Live is conflicting with Chicks Dig Time Lords.
Yeah.
And it was...
panel was moved.
Yeah,
our panel was scheduled opposite you guys.
Was now...
We had nothing to do with it, as far as I know. Sean Lyon...
It had to be the audience.
Sean Lyon got emails saying, you have to move one of the panels because we want to go to both, and that's not acceptable. So
we got a lot of feedback from it, but we didn't schedule it.
We had nothing to do with it. We found out after the fact that our panel had gotten moved to 2:30 because.
And by the way, we're really glad that we did.
We are too.
Because we didn't want to have our listeners, you know, have to make a choice if they want to go to both.
Right, and we were thrilled with that. But we had, you know, we had nothing to do with it.
Not to mention, we didn't want all guys in that.
And part of the thing is when I originally pitched the book, our publisher, Lars, was very concerned. He said, well, who do you see as the audience for this book? Because he thought there might not be enough women in Doctor Who fandom to support it. I think it was his original... Well, this was the summer of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So the new series was really quite new. And I said, no, I want a book that absolutely women will want to read, but also male Doctor Who fans can give their daughters, their wives, their girlfriends, their mothers, and say, this is a book about what I love.
Yeah.
Well, not just what I'm missing, but maybe reading this you will understand what I find appealing. And that was part of the reason why I wanted it to be anecdotal essays and very accessible to casual fans. I mean, new fans and casual fans and people who have a loved one who has fallen prey to the evils of Doctor Who, which will eat your life in the best possible ways.
Is it true that the book was originally going to be called Men Are the Waters of Mars and Women Are Venetian?
That is, in fact, a vicious, horrible lie.
Venetian lullabies.
It was always pitched as Chicks Dig Time Lords, because I am a geek who made a t-shirt. For my day job, I actually am a graphic designer. And so, quite literally, the t-shirts came before the book.
But sometimes that's the start of an idea. And something grows because it starts as something simple as, boy, what a cool phrase or whatever. And then the next thing you know, it starts like a snowball. It's building up because people are talking about it. That's a great T-shirt. Well, it's a great T-shirt for a reason because the message is resonating with somebody.
Today was the first time I had someone who, not knowing that I was one of the editors, a woman that I was talking to in the waiting room, was like, yeah, you know, really wish they called that something else. And I was like, really?
Because of the word chicks?
Yeah, and she is of a different generation than I am, and for her it had a very negative connotation.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm in my 30s, my friends and I self-identify as chicks in the way that I refer to guys as dudes, and with two O's. And we're all awesome dudes. I would never think that would be something. It didn't click in my head because I am quite literally of a different generation. We've sort of taken back ownership of that word, and it's the play on chicks dig it, chicks dig the car, chicks dig spies, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So it was a statement of chicks dig Time Lords as both a surprise, women like Doctor Who, but also a simple statement of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, chicks dig it. It's a great show. It's like the women who had to send their bras to Sci-Fi Channel to prove that there was a female audience at Farscape 10 years ago. Because they absolutely did not believe that women watched science fiction. And I think Farscape and Doctor Who are very similar in that they have a broad tone. They can do outrageous comedy, they can do heart-wrenching tragedy, and it rings completely true. Doctor Who has that kind of breadth to it and that kind of tonal range that is one of the things that appeals to both male and female fans. And I think that's a huge draw. But it was the first time. There are a lot of forms out there that have been, I don't want to say dominated by male voices, but male voices have always been heard. Loads of guys have written books and been on online forums, and that there really was a niche there that I thought it's not, I didn't think of it as feminist in the we're fighting for representation, just that this is an underrepresented audience. There's nothing out there that is women talking about their experiences with the show, and so it is feminist in that way. That it was the first platform to discuss these experiences, you know, lots of women getting together, and Robert Smith who wrote a wonderful essay with his partner Shoshana. So I do want to say that it is not completely female contributors, but that was very much a drive of the book, is we wanted to provide something unique, and hopefully it will not remain unique, that this will be, as gender parity becomes the norm in fandom and in Doctor Who fandom, that it won't be a groundbreaking, extraordinary thing. It's simply normal, like Captain Jack being homosexual.
Well, ladies, we want to thank you all for stopping by. What?
time. I feel as if I've talked too much now.
No.
But we want to thank you all for stopping by and talking about the book. We wish you the best of luck. It's Chicks Dig Time Lords. It's from Mad Norwegian.
Mad Norwegian Press. It hits, the street date is March 15th. It's available through fine online booksellers like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, as well as the madnorwegian.com website.
But if you came to Gallifrey...
And your local independent bookseller. Please support your local independent bookseller.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck on the book, and we'll keep our eye out to see if we ever make it into being baby eyes.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Enjoy the rest of the challenge. Cheers.
Chicks Dig Time Lords is available now, so check it out. Once again, various bookstores, Amazon, and etc. You heard it there in the interview. Also, we do apologize for some of the sounds that was going on there. The phones, the GSM sounds, interference from various mobile phones, a bit unavoidable at conventions and such, and the background noise as well, but we were at a convention. It was Gallifrey 21. It's hard to find a quiet spot in Gallifrey 21, or for that matter, any convention. All right, now we're going to go from Gallifrey to Germany. It's Graham Sheridan with the Germany Report for March 2010.
Welcome to another Jeremy Reports with me, your host for this part, Graham, the second Dr. Sheridan. So, there is actually news here from out in Germany for a change. So, on the 3rd of April, as everybody else, we'll be settling down to watch the 11th hour, the new episode starring Matt Smith as the 11th Doctor. There will be a live showing for up to 50 people in a town called Wesel, in Nordrhein-Westfalen in Germany. That is the postcode 46483. At a place called the Ruder Tanzgesellschaft. Now, there's a place, as I said, up to 50 people. And there will also be a schnitzel buffet. Schnitzel is basically, it's mainly pork flesh or pork meat chopped up and usually served with some sort of... sauce. There's a mushroom sauce and some sort of paprika, or as you call it in the States, pepperoni sort of sauce, and that will go at a cost of €8.50. Now they'll be starting at 16 o'clock in the afternoon, well 16 hours as we say in Germany, but 4 o'clock in the afternoon, with the looking at the buffet being around about 6:30 or 18:30 hours. And, of course, then settling down to watch the Doctor Who episode at the start time of, well, here in Europe, of 19:25 hours or 7:25 at night. Of course, this will be apparent to all you people out there who know that we're an hour ahead from the UK here in Germany. Otherwise, all there is to say is that I'm now blogging on the Gallifrey Embassy. This is usually when I find out a bit of what I perceive to be interesting news that you may either not have seen anywhere else, or the fact that your first stop is usually the Gallifreyan Embassy rather than something like Blogata Who or any of the other usual digital spy style blogs out there. So, for this moment in time, I shall hand you back to your usual regular hosts of Lewis, Ken and James.
Excellent. Thank you, Graham. Once again, great job there. And on behalf of Ken and James, thank you as well. And as you mentioned, April 3rd is the start date of the new series on BBC One. That's the new series with Matt Smith, Series 31. And it starts on April 3rd on BBC One. In the US, it's April 17th, 2 weeks later. And I believe that's the same in Canada as well on Space. And I believe on ABC and Australia as well. I'm not too sure about the latter. But if you're listening to the Sonic News Driver, which is another podcast that I do, you would know all this already because I'm keeping you up to date with some news there. So if you want to be up to date on Doctor Who news, you can subscribe to the Sonic News Driver.
What's that? It's a sonic screwdriver. Never fails.
Drop the sonic device.
Isn't my day, is it?
Even the sonic screwdriver won't get me out of this one.
Are you seeking Doctor Who news? The Sonic News Driver. Selected Doctor Who-related news stories delivered sonically. All in a bite-sized podcast. No bigger than a jelly baby.
This can function as a sonic blaster, a sonic cannon, and a triple enfolded sonic disruptor. Doc, what you got?
I've got a sonic Oh, never mind.
What?
It's sonic. Okay, let's leave it at that.
Disruptor, cannon, what?
It's sonic. Totally sonic. I have sonic
A sonic what? Screwdriver!
The Sonic News Driver. Find it on iTunes or go to sonicnewsdriver.com.
Who has a sonic screwdriver?
I do.
The Sonic News Driver. Get yours today, sonically.
Neat, isn't it?
Well, and speaking of news, over the Icon weekend, news will be coming from Who York. Who York is a New York-based organization, Doctor Who organization that puts out these special events. And Barnaby Edwards, that is, of DWNY and Who York, is going to be making an announcement soon. Now, I know what it is. They're going to announce a guest for their May 16th event, which is coming up in a couple months. So you want to start putting that on your calendar to make yourself available if you're in the New York area. And I know I have an inkling on who the guest is, but I don't want to usurp his announcement, so won't let the cat out of the bag. You'll just have to wait. You'll just have to wait for it online. Now, you can go to their website, whoyork.com, to find... Wait a second. Look at this. Here I am holding back on the announcement because they're going to make it over the Icon weekend, and it's already on their website. So since it's already on their website, I guess it's safe for me to say that it's going to be Sylvester McCoy on May 16th at Cafe 50. Now, Cafe 50 is the same place that they had Louise Jameson back in November. It's a nice place there. So go to Who York. It's they have an entrance of $20 in advance, and they have room for about 100 people in total. So you might want to get on this while you can if you're in the New York area on May 16th. That's at 6:30 p.m., Now, as I mentioned back in November, they had Louise Jameson at the same venue, which was a quiet evening there. And Barnaby Edwards, who, as I was saying before, is heads up DWNY and is involved with Who York. He also maintains a blog at thegallifreyembassy.org, so you'll want to check that out, too. But back in November, he was asking Louise Jameson how she got in on Doctor Who.
So, obviously, the role that most of the people here know about is Leela. Who was the Tom Baker's companion. Would you like to tell us a little bit about how you got the part and what the audition process and that was like?
Okay, I started off doing an enormous amount of theatre at the beginning of my career with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I didn't maybe need it, which is my first visit to New York. I lived here for 4 months in the early 70s, which is when I fell in love with it. Then my agent decided that I should do a TV series, so I auditioned for several, and one of them was Purdy. I got down to the last 10 for Purdy. Didn't happen. And a series called Angels, which I don't think, was it shown over here? Was it? No. Which was about nurses, and a couple of others. And then they saw 60 different girls for Leela. And that got narrowed down to 10, and that got narrowed down to 3, and then there were 2, and then there was me. And I got it, and the lovely, darling Pennant Roberts gave it to me. And he also gave me Blanche much later on in a series called Tenko about a women's prisoner of war camp. So I have a lot to be very grateful to Pennant for.
Cool. And that was obviously for The Face of Evil.
Yes, he said he gave it to me because I made him work in the audition. because when he read in, because they asked Tom if he'd like to come and audition the girls and help choose one, and he declined because he wanted to travel alone. Tough. And anyway, he declined, so Pennant read the doctor, and I filled in the Leela bits, and he said that there was somebody that was really making him respond, which is why he gave it to me.
That's great. And it was always supposed to be a recurring role, right? Or was it just for the one story?
Oh, it was always, yes, it was for the season, yeah.
So what was it like meeting Tom for the first time? Was it the first time you met him in rehearsal, or...?
The first time I met Tom was over lunch while he was... You'll have to give me the name of the story. The one he recorded on his own?
The Deadly Assassin.
Yes, he was recording... Thank you. He was recording The Deadly Assassin, and I literally shook... He came up to the BBC lunch canteen place, shook hands over the table. Lovely to meet you. And that was it. And then the next day, the next time I saw him, and was when we were doing, because it was in the days when they mixed film with video, we did some pre-filming for The Face of Evil at Leeling Studios, and that's where I met him, in costume, in my dressing gown, in the dressing room. And Pennant came in, and we rehearsed that scene, so I said much more text to him than I had actual conversation by the time we got recording.
So that was a few minutes with Louise Jameson from the evening of the Who York event in November. So thank you, Barnaby Edwards, and also thank you, Louise Jameson. So once again, May 16th, mark your calendar for Sylvester McCoy. It's happening all over again at the Cafe 50. Go to whoyork.com for details. Now, speaking of local events, there's a local book signing, and Tony Gallicant of the Flashing Blade podcast, as well as the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance, asked to play this message concerning the signing there.
Hello there. This is Tony Gallicant on behalf of the Doctor Who Podcaster Alliance, an alliance of Who podcasts held together simply by people being terribly nice to each other, quite frankly. The end of March, 27th of March, at Waterston's... Is it Lakeside in Thurrock, or is it Thurrock in Lakeside? One or the other. I think it's Lakeside in Thurrock. Are holding a signing with the Colin Baker, Anique Wills, and I think it's Paul Stone from the Shooty Dog Thing fanzine, which we've mentioned in the past. The Shooty Dog Thing's now got a book out, which we've been encouraging you to go and buy, and they're holding a signing there. And the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance will be there, and we're going to be recording a podcast live there and then, sat around a table looking quite sad, really. There'll be myself, there will be Professor Dave, with no last name, and also our chief scientist, Adam Purcell, over at staggeringstories.net. There might be more people as well. Apart from recording it between the three of us, we're going to be coming into the queue. We're going to be talking to people, getting their views and their opinions on various things. So come along. I think to get something signed, you've got to buy Colin's book, but it's quite a good book anyway. It's a collection of his writings for the Bucks Free Press. And yeah, it could be a good, fun few hours, basically. So if you can make it, please do come up and say hello. And the podcast itself will be available to any of the members of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance, which is practically every Doctor Who podcast. And if they want to run it, they're more than welcome to. The Doctor Who Podcaster Alliance, the alliance that likes a nice cup of... No, hang on. We pod so you don't have... No. Guys, we really need to come up with a slogan.
Thank you, Tony. Well, we encourage you to go there if you're in the area. Check it out. And let us know how it was. Send your feedback to feedback@podshock.net. We want to hear what you had to say about the book signing, as well as the various other events that you may be attending. We can't cover it all, so we rely on some of our feedback and from our listeners to fill us in on other events that we're not at ourselves. We also rely on Podshock supporting subscribers. If you're not already a subscriber, please go to podshock.net or gallifreyanimacy.org or arttrap.com and join up there. You'll be supporting this podcast and get extra content and other bonus offers. We just recently gave away a copy of the Planet of the Dead Blu-ray disc, and that went to Helen Lesser. Congratulations, Helen. Also, thank you, Ken Orkel, who originally was picked for it, but had a copy of it already, so offered to give it to someone else. So thank you both, and congratulations, and thank you for being Podshock supporting subscribers. You too can become a Podshock supporting subscriber if you're not already one. It will make you feel better knowing that you're supporting a show you love, and will help to ensure that we can continue and grow. Once again, go to gallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net and click on the banner to become a Doctor Who Podshock supporting subscriber today. Hey, I realize I'm sort of rushing through today's show, but as I record this, it's 20 after 8 p.m. and Sarah Douglas is about to go on a Q&A at Icon 29 in about 10 minutes, and I'm about an hour away, so it doesn't look like I'm going to make it there for that. All to get you this podcast out in time. Anyway, I'll be arriving very late at Icon, and but there'll still be some programming going on, I'm sure. All right, well, that's going to wrap things up for this show. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. You can follow Ken Deep there as well, twitter.com/KenDeep. James Norton is twitter.com/JamesNorton. Of course, Podshock, you can follow Podshock on Twitter as well, twitter.com/Podshock. Always visit our website, gallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. Once again, thank you to all our supporting subscribers. This episode and all the episodes that we're doing now would not be possible if it were not for you. So, heartfelt thanks to you all. More extra episodes are coming up soon, as well as our regular show. So, stay tuned to Doctor Who Podshock. Until then, cheers everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyembassyOrg. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.